Well, if he doesn't get here in time, we can probably handle it, but it sounds like Jeff's on his way. Well, if you're prepared to hear some biology, time to go to the bar. There's not going to be a whole lot of biology in here, Mr. Nichols. You came over a little while ago and you said, I want to hear something about dollars and cents. And really, that's what the focus of this whole talk is about. It's about dollars and cents. And when I first came to Kentucky, like Roy said, about 6 years ago, you know, made sense to AI. You know, I mean, most people won't argue that 99% of the time you've got better genetic value in the AI studs than what you've got in your own pasture. Okay? And most people won't argue that the calves that are generated from AI are probably going to be better than the ones that they get through natural service. But here I am, fresh, I'm in Kentucky, trying to come in and, you know, I'm going to try to convince these old Kentucky farmers that they need to synchronize an AI. And you know what? They didn't care. And I'll just be real blunt. Does it make me money? It's kind of like vaccinations used to be, okay, before we had all these CPH sales and organized marketing opportunities. You know, you vaccinated your calves because you knew you had to. Because you knew it made sense to make everything healthy. 9 times out of 10, you didn't get paid for it. Okay? So one of the first things that I wanted to do when I got to Kentucky was to look at whether or not estrus synchronization and AI actually made you money. Okay? And what you're going to see, first of all, is some data that Sandy Johnson just presented not too long ago, and then some of the data that we've collected here in Kentucky. Well, even though most of us would agree that, you know, the genetics at the AI studs are better than what we have in pasture, if you look at the USDA survey, less than 10% of beef producers in the United States currently subject either their cows or heifers to estrus synchronization in AI. Why? Well, part of it's the nature of our industry. You know, here in the East, we don't have quite as big an expanse to turn the cattle out on as you guys do out west. But still, for the most part, cattle are managed in large grazing areas, and it's just a laborious pain in the rear to get those rascals in and handle them. Okay? Along with that, we're limited by our facilities. If I had a dollar for every time I was on a farm and that we didn't have a holding area or a sorting pen or even a chute to work the cattle in, I wouldn't need to be working at the University of Kentucky. Okay? Most of the time, most producers are limited by their facilities. Another thing that's pretty dominant here in the East is beef cattle just isn't that important. Okay? The revenue that's generated from the beef cattle enterprise is secondary on 85% of the farms in Kentucky to off-farm income or grain production. And if it's secondary, you know, a lot of people certainly aren't interested in squeezing that extra dime, perhaps, out of something that's not their main generator. And then one thing that I've found that I think is really, it surprised me, truthfully. But a lot of beef producers seem to be somewhat intimidated. They're not very confident of their knowledge of the biological control of estrus. And when we go out and we talk about sticking a cedar in and giving a shot here and a shot there and pulling the cedar out, and how many days was that, and when was I supposed to give this again? And I don't understand. Well, what? And people get confused. They get a little intimidated. And it's something that Tom talked about a second ago, early weaning. Weaning at 56 days. Whoa! My granddaddy didn't do that. You know? Beef cattle production is a slave to tradition. It always has been. I don't know if it always will be, but certainly up to now it has been. And our tradition in the beef industry certainly has not been to synchronize an AI. What we're going to talk about, first of all, like I kind of alluded to earlier, is we're going to look at exactly what does it cost me to get a cow pregnant. Okay, and then we're going to examine some of the data that I have as far as long-term return and short-term return on investment to estrus synchronization and AI. How many of you have sat down with Roy's calculator? And if you don't know Roy's calculator, it's a tablet and a pencil. Okay, that's his computer. How many of you sat down with a tablet and a pencil and a calculator and actually figured out how much it costs you to get a cow pregnant? One. Two. Couple. Not many. It's just kind of a foreign... We didn't think about thinking about it, truthfully. You know, how much does it cost me to get a cow pregnant? Dr. Sandy Johnson, who's a beef cattle extension specialist at Kansas State University, and some of her co-workers just recently published a really good article where they've developed a computer model to examine the cost of pregnancy, not only for natural service, but also with incorporation of estrus synchronization and AI. And what you'll find in that paper, and really, I mean, you don't need to read it to understand some of these things, right? But the factors that affect cost per pregnancy certainly is how much you paid for the bull or how much you paid for the technician and the semen and so forth, the service costs, how many cows you ran with a bull, how much it costs you to maintain that bull for a year, and then one thing we don't necessarily always think about is pregnancy rate and the effect that pregnancy rate can have. This is a table taken out of Sandy's data that shows the cost per pregnancy using natural service for sires purchase price $1,500 to $3,000 and a bull to cow ratios from 1 to 15 down to 1 to 50. Okay? And what some things that I just want to point out is, of course, this is the economists were involved, so a lot of this stuff gets kind of funky every once in a while, so you have to bear with me with all their numbers. But some sort of important numbers is to remember is the total variable cost, which includes labor, vet, feed, protein, blah, 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 okay? And that's even across the board. And then you can start calculating depreciation on equipment to have the bulls, the bull itself, interest, death, loss, to get your total fixed cost, which, of course, are going to vary depending upon your input purchase. And then, of course, down here, the bottom line, total cost per year, which range from $751 up to $1,300 to keep your $3,500 bull. Probably didn't think about that it cost you $1,200 to $1,300 a year for that $3,500 bull. Bull-to-cow ratio certainly influences cost per pregnancy. Obviously, the higher bull-to-cow ratios or more cows to bulls or lower bull-to-cow ratio, I guess. If you run 50 cows per bull, your input costs, your cost per pregnancy are down around $16. Where if you bought that $3,000 bull and ran him with 15 cows, cost you a nickel or two. $90 a pregnancy. Now that's assuming a 94% pregnancy rate. Now I know that had to come from the West because we don't get 94% pregnancy rates out here. Okay? I mean, you'll see data that we got to work our rear end off to get in the 90s when we get here a little bit later on. But one thing that impressed me about this data was the range. The absolute range from $16 to $90.50 and cost per pregnancies just for your natural service. Well, how does estrus synchronization and AI fit in? Okay? If you look at estrus synchronization and AI as an enterprise, okay, the tool that most economists like to use the most and most beef producers need to use more of is a tool called the partial budget. Whoop, going the wrong way. The partial budget. What the partial budget does is it gives you an analysis of the economic advantage of an enterprise by comparing the pluses, increased returns, decreased costs, to the minuses, decreased returns, and decreased costs. And down here somewhere, you're going to get an answer, red or black. Red, obviously, nah. Black, obviously, think about it. Okay. In the case of estrus synchronization and AI, some of the pluses... Heavier calves, okay? Heavier calves, some due to genetics, a lot due to age, okay? Tom talked quite a bit about calving distribution. If you One of the first things that you observe when you implement an estrus synchronization program is the dramatic shift in calving distribution the next year. Okay, you can typically get 80% of the females exposed to calf in that first 30 to 40 days. Tremendous shift in age of the calf, and therefore tremendous shift in weaning weight. Improved genetics, both the calves for the growth and also the long-term effects through the replacement females. And also you get an increase in the uniformity of the calf crop. Mostly because you got more calves of like age, right? But also because you're using fewer sires. If half your calves are out of one bull, if you're in a large herd situation, that's really going to reduce your genetic pool and you're going to increase your calf uniformity. Another plus or decreased cost in multi-sire situations, you've got fewer bulls. Fewer bulls not only to purchase, but fewer bulls to fiddle with. Okay, if anything tears anything up, it's the bull. If you've got to replace a gate, it's at the bullpen. If you've got to replace a feed trough, it's at the bullpen. Every time. Okay? So, considerably fewer pains by having decreased bulls. Hopefully, you'll have less labor because you have a more concentrated calving season. Again, the major benefit from synchronization and AI is that dramatically reduced or shifted calving distribution, and that will considerably aid you when it comes time to calve. And then hopefully, after you listen to Tom, you figured out that proven calving-ease bull might be a pretty good idea. Okay? Perhaps you'll actually save a few more calves by being able to AI to a bull that's proven in its calving ease. On the minus side, well, you're going to have fewer cull bulls to sell. You know, I guess that's kind of a minus. Then also on the minus side, you're definitely going to have increased costs. Those increased costs for planning and management of your synchronization system. Of course, you got to buy the products, the semen. You got to get the tech there. You got to get those rascals up 2, 3, 4 times, depending upon what system you use. And you may, that is, you know, if you want to stay healthy and have a good day instead of a poor day, you may actually want to improve your facilities just a little bit. What we're going to concentrate on first, we're going to touch on each of these areas as we go through here, but what I want to concentrate on first is just the increased cost or how cost of pregnancy changes when we incorporate estrus synchronization and AI. What are the factors then that affect the cost of pregnancy after estrus synchronization and AI? Well, obviously, cost of the service. You've got semen costs, technician costs, labor costs, and so forth. You know, again, the facilities and whatnot that are fixed costs. Okay, that you have to swallow. Okay, and we'll see a little while later if it's costing you, or if it's returning money to your pocketbook. One thing we're going to talk about here in a minute is that pregnancy rate dramatically affects your cost per pregnancy. Herd size makes a huge difference. And, of course, estrus synchronization system that you use can also have a dramatic impact on your cost per pregnancy. First system and the first data that we're going to talk about is the effect of pregnancy rate when an estrus synchronization program is employed. And the synchronization system used was SelectSync. And I just threw this up there to remind everybody that SelectSync is an administration or injection of GnRH on the first day, 7 days later, prostaglandin, check heat and AI for 6-7 days. Okay? This table shows the effect of pregnancy rate on your breeding cost per pregnant female in a SelectSync program. What Sandy did here, and again, this is from Sandy's data, she just looked at the larger herd sizes, the multi-herd sires, okay, operations, because that's the number of bulls you have to purchase has a dramatic impact upon your breeding costs. As you can see, as AI pregnancy rate decreases, your cost per pregnancy increases, and of course, the proportion of that cost that's attributed either to the bulls or to the AI program shifts. Same thing when you get up into the larger herds, your cost of pregnancies increase. Now, does anything strike you funny about those cost of pregnancies? $40, $45, $53. That's well within the range of what we saw for the cost of pregnancies for natural service. Okay? I mean, the one thing that I always get pounded with, how much is this going to cost me? Okay? It's not really going to cost you any more than what your natural service situation does. Now, of course, we hope that our estrus synchronization and AI system generates us a more saleable, a higher market value product. And so what Sandy tried to do in this slide was she compared breeding systems, natural service versus SelectSync, MGA prostaglandin, and CoSync at various herd sizes. And what she did way over here on the right was she adjusted that for 500-pound equivalent calf. Because what Sandy and her co-workers estimated was that they were going to get about 25 pounds more calf, okay, in their synchronized and AI cows than they would in their natural service cows. So it would be more appropriate to calculate the cost based upon an equal weight at market. Okay, and so that's what she did. She just simply adjusted for an equivalent weight at market, or a 500-pound equivalent weaned calf. In the natural services situation, she ran, you know, 2 bulls and 4 bulls and 12 bulls. And her cost for pregnancies were $56, $34, and $34. And the cost for pregnancy for that 500-pound weaned calf was $12.91. This is per 100 weight, $12.91, $7.79, and $7.79. The SelectSync system, the number of days worked and the number of hours, certainly as herd size goes up, the number of hours used to synchronize those cows go up. And the number of bulls used, okay, goes up, but it's certainly much reduced compared to that of natural service. The cost per pregnancy, okay, decreases as herd size increases. And the cost per pregnancy per 500-pound equivalent calf was actually less in all three cases. So for the same amount of product, you're actually spending fewer dollars. Okay, so it doesn't cost you anything. Okay, for the same amount of product. Same thing for the MGA prostaglandin system. Down here, the CoSync system, you see a slight reduction, okay, or increase in the cost per pregnancies. Why? Well, you're dumping a straw of semen and you're dumping another shot of GnRH into every single cow. Your costs go up. Okay, even though your labor hours and your total number of days work go down, your costs actually go up. Okay, because you're putting more semen cost and more drug cost into each of those females. Now, if you're sitting here down at this 30 herd, 50 cents, you know, 50 cents difference, it's not a whole lot. Okay, not a whole lot. Now, what we're doing is taking that same data set and we're looking again at the influence of pregnancy rate as it's boxed within herd size, and again, within that 500-pound equivalent weaned calf. And as you would expect, as you know, pregnancy rate goes up, typically your cost, okay, now in this system, the cost stays basically the same because you're putting the same thing in every cow, okay, but as you come across to your higher herd sizes, the costs go down. And again, in CoSync, you're typically running a little bit higher cost per pregnancies in your natural service system. Okay, when you get down here to the higher pregnancy rates, the costs pretty much even out. MGA prostaglandin and SelectSync almost always come out cost effective. Okay, least cost to actually do the MGA and the synchronization systems compared to the natural service. So what's that tell us? Natural service situations, your cost per pregnancy can vary incredibly, okay, based upon your breeding situation. And in most instances, your cost per pregnancy is almost identical when you're incorporating estrus synchronization and AI compared to natural service when calculated on an equivalent production basis. Okay? Now, if you want more information, that's all from Sandy Johnson's stuff. It's just recently published in the Kansas State University Cattleman's Day book. It's available on the website, and it's really a good article, but it's going to take you a minute or two to get through it. Okay? But that didn't really answer my question. Okay? I want to know if it makes you money. Okay, so it costs the same. So, does it make us money? And really, when you look through the literature, Tom, it amazes me that there's nothing on profitability of this enterprise. Nothing. Okay? So what we did, and this trial has been done a few years now, is we initiated a trial in Western Kentucky, just a commercial cow herd. We had 351 mature cows and first calf heifers. Two-thirds of those rascals, and I'll tell you, the reason it's two-thirds and not 50-50 is I was paying for it. And, you know, we started at 100-0, and we haggled down. Okay, and so we ended up settling on two-thirds, one-third. But basically, 251 of those cows were AI'd, and the other were just exposed to a bull for 60 days. And the important thing was, they were on the same, at the same location, treated the same way, and the bull turnout date was the same date that we AI'd. Okay? Because some of the literature that you'll find in the data comparing AI versus natural service, they have a herd of cattle and they synchronize them, AI them, turn the bull out. And then they compare the AI calves with the natural service calves. Well, they're 21 days older. You know? You're a little confounded, you know, you're a little confounded there, and you can't really determine exactly where the differences were. One thing was we did keep track of and determine all costs, including the exact minutes of labor. The system that we used to synchronize that cows was one near and dear to Tom's heart. Co-sync. Now, Roy, we call it co-sync because it's just easier for us to understand it. Co, you give them both at the same time. You know, but here I'll call it co-sync for Colorado sync. Okay, but anyway, we used co-sync. It worked better in our situation on this farm. And truthfully, in the East, something like this works really well. You can schedule 3 days, you get them all taken care of, and you go home. And consistently, you do a pretty good job. Okay, what happened? The breeding performance was significantly altered in the synchronized group. 85% of them calved in the first 30 days, and I want to tell you that these folks had never AI'd before. This was a fresh herd, had never been, they just came into a new operation as far as synchronization and AI, and we see this typically, that we'll get that 80 to 85% of them to calve in that first 30 days. And we had a 90% overall calving rate, which is really good for the state of Kentucky. In our natural breeding situation, we had 62% of the cows calve in the first 30 days, which, by the way, is exceptional for here, with an 81% overall calving rate. Now, I'm going to ask Tom, there's a 9% difference here. Where do you think a great deal of that 9% open rate came from? Why is there 9% fewer cows? What group of cows make up that 9%? It's the young cows. Almost time and time again, it's the young cows that pull our calving rate, our pregnancy rate, our reproductive efficiency way down. Over the costs, our GNRH was $4 a shot, so $8 total. Okay, prostaglandin was $4, technician $5, semen, we got a good deal on it, Tom. You know, Roy or whoever it was worked with us real well. I can't remember where we got it from. But our labor costs, which what we basically did to calculate labor, is when we got to the farm, we had a stopwatch, we hit the trigger, we went to go get the cows. Got the cows up, we worked the cows, we went back to the farm, we hit the trigger again, we looked down, that's how much time it took us. Okay? And basically it took us an 8-hour day to go from leaving the house to getting back to the house. We did it 3 times. There was 4 of us. Labor's cheap right now. Okay. So if you just multiply those out, it comes out to $2.88 a piece or $29.88 to get those cows pregnant. And Roy, I think that falls right in with almost all the stuff that you guys see at Select Sire, somewhere between $30 and $35 for your cost of pregnancies. What happened? Well, cows in the sink group, we had 251 versus 100. Again, the calving rate was 9% higher. And the calving distribution was greatly shifted so that we had 23% more of those cows calve in the first 30 days. Statistically, we did have a significant difference in the average day to calving. They calved 10 days earlier. And we had a significant difference, that 9% and percent calf crop weaned. Our weaning weight jumped a whopping 72 pounds. Okay, now that, I'll tell you, that's more than we predicted. I expected 30 to 40. We got 72. Why did we get 72? We wanted to maximize weaning weight differences. Man, that's kind of what our goal was here. And we got more from the genetics, and we got more from this shift in calving distribution than we expected. Okay? I mean, one thing, one some data that I'd like to see is, you know, what's the average daily gain of a calf born in the southeast in the middle of April versus the middle of March? You know, we give everything 2 pounds or 2.5 pounds a day. It doesn't happen that way. Those calves born later don't grow as well. Okay, you don't get the same weight per day of age. And I think we see a lot of that reflected in this 72.6 pounds. Pounds of calf weaned per cow exposed, which of course is the true measure of reproductive efficiency, went up 110 pounds, which is extremely impressive. But as you'll see as we go through the data, fairly repeatable. So what did that do to our bottom line, or what did that do to his pocketbook? That extra weaning weight, and I just threw in $80 a hundredweight, probably would have gotten a little bit more at that time, but 80 is a fairly consistent figure, had 9% more calves born, so we got more calves from the weight, and we simply had more calves. Add those two numbers, you get that number. You take that number minus that 2988 we had before, and it didn't cost him a dime to synchronize an AI. It made him 70 bucks a cow. Okay? Didn't cost him a dime. It made him 70 bucks a cow. Now, there's a lot of things I'm not even including in this. 251 cows requires a few bulls. Okay? I haven't included that yet because those guys with single sire herd sizes, this is the advantage they get. Okay? What's the advantage that this guy got? What I have here, we have a partial budget, kind of a little game that we play a lot, actually, with producers, where, of course, we've got the pluses and the minuses like we've looked at before, but now we've got actual dollar figures. And what we figured in here was his cost savings in his bulls. He basically had to have half the bulls that he normally would have had for that 251 cows. So his reduced cost for those five head, his net change in profit was $32,359 on 251 cows, or $129, give or take a few pennies a whop. Okay? Didn't cost him a dime to do synchronization in AI. Okay? Now, we did this project 4 years ago. Man's still AI'ing. Never AI'd before, never considered AI before. But we can see why. Okay? We can certainly see why. Those are kind of the short-term effects. What I want to talk to you just briefly about now is a long-term study that I've initiated where we're going to try to evaluate over basically a 20-year period a changing in a breeding system where originally it was natural service and we switched to AI, and we're going to see how that affects the overall bottom dollar. So again, we're really just in the third year of this 20-year trial. I mean, we've got the original 10-year back data. But basically, this farm is a little bit more reasonable for the clientele that I work with. About 45 cows and heifers total. They're basically Charolais Angus cross cows. And he kind of has a two-breed rotation. Now, I know we've got a lot of geneticists in here. Okay, and this is not a real true breed rotation. Whenever he needed another bull, he went and got whatever breed he didn't have at that time. Okay, so if he had a Charolais, 4 or 5 years later, he went and bought an Angus. Okay, that was his two breed rotation. Over the last 10 years, his average percent calf crop weaned, and that's the percentage of cows that actually wean a calf, 74.5%. I don't know how many folks in here are from Kentucky, but I'm going to tell you that's average for us folks. Okay? That's average. And I know some of you guys that are sitting up there in that 90s are going, whew, I'm glad I don't live in Kentucky. Okay? But the way we like to think about it is we got a whole heck of a lot of room for improvement here. Okay? Ah, Jeff's here. I can quit wasting time. Okay? We got a whole heck of a lot of room for improvement. And really, this figure is what brought this guy to us. He came to us and he said, we've done this for 10 years. You can't beat it. I've tried everything. You can't beat it. Okay? 74.5. That's just the way it is here. Okay? His average weaning weight, and you'll see more accurate numbers, but steers and heifers combined, give or take 500 pounds. Okay? What we did, changed his breeding program. He had his sort of rotational breeding system, and we changed it to what Dare likes to call the AI terminal system. An AI terminal system is where we synchronize all the females for a timed insemination, and we time inseminate to maternally oriented bulls. Okay, in this situation, the producer's choice was Hereford and Angus. And basically, he bred the Whitens to the Blackens, and the Blackens to the Reddens, and so he got Smokes and Blacks and Baldies, which, by the way, all sell real well in Kentucky. Okay? Replacement heifers over this 10-year period that we're going to do this are all going to come from the AI-impregnated cows, or in other words, AI-sired heifers. We clean up with a terminal sire. His choice was Charlet, and every calf born from the terminal sire we sell, which, you know, we think makes a little sense. The data, and what you're going to see, is just strictly production and economic analysis. Again, there's not a whole lot of biology here. The control data was collected from 1991 to 2000. Okay? And you're just going to see CHAPS records and SPA records from this farm over that period of time in an average. The treated data, just what we got in those 2 years and what we're going to get over the next 8. Okay? And this is what he found. This table illustrates what we found so far. For our long term, and of course, you know, 2 years is not long term, but I just kind of wanted to introduce this stuff to you. Our long term effects of profitability in a medium sized herd. Over that 10-year period, and for these last 2 years, his cow herd size has remained relatively constant, and his calving rate, okay, which averaged 82%, of course, took a dramatic jump. And again, in Kentucky, this is very significant. I mean, we don't see those over 90% that often. His percent calf crop weaned, which we illustrated earlier, was 74.5%. Went from 91% in the first year to 86% in 2002. And this 86%, you'll see, is reflected throughout the rest of the data as far as the economic analysis. His weaning weight average in pounds for his steers and heifers didn't change as much as we expected. Okay? But again, he was using, for the 10 years prior to this, 7 of those years he had Charlet bulls. Okay? And now most of his calves are coming from maternally oriented sires, who would expect his weaning weight to drop, to not be as maximized as what we saw in the original experiment. Okay? However, what he thinks is the most important, what I think is kind of interesting too, is that his sale weight, after a 25-day backgrounding situation, increased dramatically. Okay? And there is a line of research that demonstrates that older calves gain better in backgrounding operations. You know, it makes sense. Older calves ball less, they recover from stress of weaning a whole lot easier, and they gain more. Okay? So he had an additional about 60 pounds, give or take a little, of sale weight compared to that average from 91 to 2000. His pounds of calf weaned per cow exposed, about 100 pounds the first year, and of course, since he lost 5% more calves, that's going to affect your pounds of calf weaned per cow exposed pretty dramatically. Okay? Number of cows sold, he sold quite a few cows in this year, but that's not really calculated in the data. His cash cow costs are higher now than what they were for that 10-year average. But this is he and I talked just in passing quite a bit today, about 1 o'clock. And he over that 10-year period, he went through quite a few production changes, trying to find, you know, that better percent calf crop weaned. And for a long time, for the first several years, he was in that $150 to $175 per cow range. Basically, he was milking everything he could out of the ground, not putting a lick back into it, not putting anything into the cows. Okay, and in those years, his performance was kind of poor. He figured out that he needed to do a little better, and for the 3 or 4 years prior to this, his cow costs are very similar to what we have here in the 2001 and 2002 data. The interesting thing, and what's really interesting in the next slide you'll see, is his net profit per cow exposed, because we need to calculate how many of those rascals actually got pregnant, right? Doubled, nearly doubled in that first year, and again dropped because he lost 5% calves right after they weaned. If he would have maintained at 91%, those figures would have been nearly identical. Okay. Now, one thing I want to point out is the dramatic difference in the first year. Okay. Now, I wanted to use that 10-year average because, you know, in just 1 year on one farm, you can have a tremendous amount of environmental influence. For instance, this year in Kentucky, if you were doing any pregnancy rate stuff, you know, I mean, last year where we had just tremendous heat, forget it. You know, we didn't get cows pregnant. But one thing that was very interesting from 2000 to 2001, this is the last year, okay, in the control data. This is the first year in the treated data. The average sale weight went up. Market price stayed basically the same. Pregnancy rate went way up. Percent calf crop weaned, of course, went way up. Pounds of calf weaned per cow exposed went way up. Cow cost did not change. Okay, and that's really the point I was trying to make before, is that the reason that that was $40 lower was about 7-8 years ago, he didn't put anything into the cows. Okay? Now he's putting, he's probably putting a little bit too much into the cows now, but still the cow costs are the same. And his net profit, and this is, you know, take-home money on that 50-cow herd, increased $100 per cow. Very similar to what we saw in the previous data. So to summarize, estrus synchronization and AI is absolutely a profitable enterprise in both the short and long term. Doesn't cost you a dime. It's a profitable enterprise. And we're just talking about taking calves to the stockyards. Where do you maximize the value of your cattle? You maximize them by selling them on the grid or selling them on their performance. Okay? If you look at the Angus data, there's a $200 difference in the carcass value of their top 10 carcass sires and their bottom 10 carcass sires. Okay? How much more are those profits going to go up if you identify a target and breed to hit that target? And this is my smart aleck slide. Okay? Do you want to be more efficient? I think we all would like to make a little more money. And for the most part in Kentucky, that's the big question. Is it worth the effort? I know one guy that will work cattle 3 times for $32,000. With that, I'll answer any questions. I drug on long enough for you to get here, Jeff.
Any questions for us? If not, let's do some rounds.